This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Fake the Nation, episode 272.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and where we take the sweet date of America and wrap it into the salty bacon that is democracy. Unless you're in Texas, in which case it's like a bacon rack piece of something not awesome, like the tree bark. I'm your host, Nagin Farsad, and today we're going to talk about how Texas is not awesome right now and why there's tree bark inside their bacon wrap dates instead of dates. We'll also talk about how dudes in college are dwindling feature, and we'll dip into a grab bag of issues like the debt ceiling and R. Kelly and the Tonys. Today, I have such a fantastic panel. I'm so excited for this panel. Oh, my God. Joining us for the 11th time, veteran of the show. We love her so much. She's the co-creator of The Daily Show. If that's not a fucking credit, I don't know what is in America. She's also the founder of the Abortion Access Front. And if that's not a fucking credit, I don't know what is. She is the tireless, the hilarious Liz Winstead. Hey, Liz.
Hello.
And also joining us on the panel, again, veterans on the show today. We're just lucky. Comedian, creator of Tinder Live, which is a show I'm going to be performing at in New York City this weekend if you're in town. She's author of How to Be Alone, which is an hilarious book. Folks, it is Lane Moore. Hey, Lane.
Hi, good to be here.
Oh, my God. Before we get into it, I just want to remind listeners that we're on patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. You can join the Patreon. And I just posted this month's essay. I post an essay every month. This month's essay just went live. And it is called Fuck You Fall. And it is for those of us who actually dislike the season of autumn. Yeah, I fucking take. I have that hot take. Anyway, so read all about my many reasons for hating fall and join patreon.com, /Nagin Farsad. We have many levels of support and you just help the show keep going. So thank you so much for everyone who already has supported. And for those of you who have written to me, in support of my anti-fall position, I feel the love on this controversial stance I have taken. Let's get into it with topic number one. Men are falling behind in college. By the end of 2021, the academic year in June, women made up 59.5% of college students, an all-time high, and men made up only 40.5% of those students. Colleges and universities had 1.5 million fewer students compared with 5 years ago, and men accounted for 71% of that decline. And if the trend continues, two women will earn a college degree for every one man. Lane, what's going on?
Well, the first thing I thought of when I read about that was, oh yeah, because we ask way more of women. And men can do the bare minimum, more or less than the bare minimum. We don't really care. I can't tell you how many men I have heard from who've been like, I have this really high paying job and I literally do nothing. I've never heard that from a woman, a non-binary person. I've never really heard that from queer people. I just hear that from cis men just constantly. So that was my first thought, was that like women are like, I would like to make a living wage. And, you know, also probably, you know, of course, just interested in this thing that we did not always have access to. We did not always have access to education. It is increasingly something that we have access to, which is wonderful. But that was just my gut instinct, that it was just women being like, I would love to be on par with the average cis man, particularly cis white man. Like, it just... Yeah.
Right. And I think, well, it's an interesting point, right? That like, what, so we lived for centuries as, you know, from whenever college and universities were invented, we lived in a system where only men went.
Yeah.
You know, and so now we're kind of going in the other direction where it's now more heavily female, and who knows how long this trend will last, whatever. But if this trend holds, it'll be something that more women go to. Now, I mean, part of me is like, it's so what? Like, we lived in a system where right. mostly men did it for a long time. And if we go in the other direction, who cares? It's not like society crumbled when it was mostly men. Society will, again, not crumble if it's mostly women.
Yeah.
And then maybe then it's mostly women who take leadership roles or
right,
whatever.
Exactly.
Like, again, it's fine. I don't see a real problem with that. But I do think that it shouldn't. That it shouldn't be happening, because it worries me about what's happening with the dudes. Like, Liz, okay, where do you fall on this trend?
Well, I think it's hard to stay in college and attend Proud Boy rallies, so I think people were making decisions.
They have better things to do. Let's just be honest.
You know, there's a lot of extracurriculars that have come up that have dovetailed exactly with how this trend is going, and I find that alarming. But I feel... like, I think
well,
both of you...
That, and that's what my concern, yes.
You know, and so I feel like that is right. But I also feel like it only makes sense that as we, over the course of the past 10 years, develop STEM programs and help young women and people be introduced into areas of interest that they've been thrown out of, that... you're like, oh my God, the thing I really love that no one ever nurtured me to do, I can actually follow that path now. It makes perfect sense that the floodgates are going to be open for higher education opportunities for these kind of things that were never available to folks before. And so I feel like it's just men seem to need education more than ever. Because they just seem to be doubling down in their own rage and anger around, you know, fake censorship on college campuses and cancel culture and all this kind of like odd stuff that just feels bizarre to me. And I wonder if part of it is that they're believing the hype of these Joe Rogans and these, you know, Dave Rubens and all these people who are saying that college is so terrible and such a liberal wasteland that they'll just be emasculated beyond any epic emasculation if they actually attend higher learning.
And I can't find this quote, but we read a piece in the Wall Street Journal, which is basically put a lot of these numbers together, and in the piece, someone, I think a college administrator, someone said, there's nothing more scary than a lonely boy, and that we should be more scared of, and I think that's right, because, you know, it seems like there's a trend with these men being like attracted by the philosophies of people like Joe Rogan and Dave. I don't even know who David Rubin is, but I will look him up. It sounds like maybe not. I'm scared. Okay, I'm pretty scared for whoever that is. But even your joke about Proud Boy rallies. I mean, there is a particular demographic that we're seeing. You know, what's interesting? I think I read another statistic that like the working class white men, what young white men, are lower in number in college and university than working class Black and Latino men. Which is interesting, because it's like that's also the particular demographic that ends up kind of being siphoned off into some of these fringe groups who are totally up to no good. Again, folks, before I get any emails, let's just do a quick hashtag not all men, just as a blanket. I know that this is not, and we have a lot of wonderful young men in our lives. Some of us have sons, you know what I mean? And you're doing a great job. This is not about them, but this is about some of them. There are are susceptible to some of these ideologies, and they're susceptible to these ideologies when they can't find, you know, when they're not kind of in a community, you know, for example, a college community that they can see themselves in and function well and learn and work well with others. I mean, part of college too is just like meeting people and girls and going to parties and being social and finding your friends and not slipping through the cracks where you are lonely. Part of it is literally building your own friend family. So when you're not doing that, like, where do you go? Now, Lane, what do you think about admission schools weighing, you know, basically putting their thumb on the scale for dudes, because some of these numbers are crazy? Like, for example, like at Baylor University, the undergraduate student body is 60% female. So the admission rate for men last year was 7% points higher than for women, which is to say it was easier to get in to Baylor if you were a man. What do you think of that, of doing that so that the numbers can be evened out?
So they're trying to make it easier for men to get things?
Yeah.
I don't know that we have ever needed that. I don't know that it could be easier. Why? Like, what are we doing? We didn't do that. We didn't do that in the past when it was like, oh no, this entire industry is male. Like, everything is still so male dominated. Like, so much of, right. And the white guys hated that. And so that's what I'm saying. I'm like, we all, you know, historically, those were the people who were like, how dare you? And those will be the guys who'll be like, well, if you want more women to get booked on comedy festivals, women work harder. Like, shut up. I'm still like, we're still seeing, you know, I'm going to make a comparison to comedy because it's really apt. You still look at the average comedy club. It's like one woman and like 98 dudes, and nobody's going, what are we going to do to make it easier for women to make money doing this thing they've been doing for fucking ever and crushing it at? We're not looking at that. Nobody cares. But we care when, oh no, the boys, like, no.
Okay, so here's it. Okay, in defense of the thumb on the scale, okay, I'll say one thing, which is that when we were trying to even the numbers with underrepresented groups, colleges and universities began creating centers for women, centers for, Black students, Latino, you know, students of color, so that they can get extra support coming into college as, you know, one of a few person in that whole entire school, right? And those centers kind of supported them and help, maybe helped them through the process. And I thought that that was valuable. What do we think about doing something like that for dudes who may need a little extra push in getting them to even finish, because the numbers of men graduating versus women graduating is lower?
No, what?
I know, same. I'm like, I mean,
honestly, the difference is society has never stopped white cis men from achieving their dreams and goals. They only did it to themselves if they didn't simply fill out
absolutely
the entire application.
Yeah, absolutely.
So for them to assimilate and have a center that then in turn doubles down on what makes them feel comfortable, this is what's wrong, and this is what white supremacy is.
Yeah.
We want to coddle you instead of saying you live in this world now. This is a world where a lot of people live. We're sharing space. We're sharing experiences. We're sharing community. It is no longer a monolithic community. So you need to be in this monolithic world and live in it and understand that you don't get cut. Those centers were helping people be able to acclimate because shitty things were happening to them and they are experiencing things for the first time. And having community for the first time in intellectual settings that weren't afforded in life or in any other place.
Okay.
So
I'm going to point out another little thing that they're doing that I think is going to make you guys mad. So at one of these schools, I can't remember which one, they did a males and moms campaign basically messaging to the mothers. That
not the fathers.
At the dinner table, mom, we need you to talk about getting your high school transcripts in because what's part of the thing that's happening is that dudes are, you know, the young men are having maybe a hard time getting the materials in. So completed applications come in much faster from, you know, teenage girls than they do from teenage boys. So one of the things that the universities are trying to do is like get the moms more involved in their teenage boys' applications so that the actual materials come in, so that they're, because part of the reason they're not even getting as many applicants is they're just not completing the application.
Because they are entitled, and they have been raised to be entitled. College is too late. What you need to do is start teaching young boys that you need to work hard and discover your own potential and be excited about stuff, because trying to get into school is going to be hard. So really, like, all the shit we were taught, we need to start teaching boys that. And part of what teaching boys that does is teach them that there's a lot of really interesting, competent, creative, talented people in this world who don't look like you, and they're all vying for the same position. So how are you going to be great? How are you going to stand out? How are you going to be amazing? So when you fill out that college application, you're going to excel. Like, that is not the time to be doing it.
Right. Well, I mean, I think, okay, I can see the panic from universities, because I think there's also a thing where people don't want to go to gender lopsided schools. So the more lopsided it becomes, maybe like the less desirable that school is. I think they're panicking from like that position
but
as well.
Still, but I also think,
but I also,
why? Who cares?
We didn't care about that for so long. It's not changing for me. And also, like, I want to clarify too what I was talking about earlier about, in case that wasn't clear to somebody, like, I feel like probably we all get it, but when I was saying earlier about how many men I know who like do the bare minimum and get paid so much, like, it never occurs to them that they have to do more, which I think is what Liz is saying, what we're saying as a whole, which is like,
it's a cultural problem from birth.
Right. So if they can't complete something, if they're sitting there and going, this is too hard, forget it, I don't need this anyway, everything's still going to be given to me. And men do know that. I have talked to some of my male friends who are wonderful, but they will still say, the bar is super low for me, so I do as little as possible. Like, they will all admit that. And so what I am saying, and I think what Liz is saying, is like, if the bar is so low and men are like, forget it, I'm not even going to do this, and there'll be no repercussions from me, it is not anyone's responsibility to reach out to those men. It's not.
I think I do worry about the kind of the men, again, that are susceptible to fringe ideologies, who will then take a minimum wage job instead of going to school, and then who will develop, you know, who'll just start getting like angry and frustrated that they can't make enough money or whatever, and then they'll start being just like enticed by shitty ideologies that are dangerous.
But that's the thing.
But that's everyone's own responsibility, though.
I don't know if that's where you were going to go, Liz, but it's like, that's everyone's own responsibility to look at viewpoints that are different from yours.
Helping somebody with college applications, these people were skating through a lot of shit. Showing people opportunity from the get-go, feminism helps everybody. Intersectionality helps everybody. You know, being in cross-cultural spaces where you are given the opportunity to explore every single thing you think is good about yourself and think about how that can be something that you can do in your world. That's what we need to do. And that's the whole thing, is if up until it's time for you to move out of the house, nobody's helped you do any kind of introspection or growth or anything, and you've been allowed to skate on every test up until that point, that's a systemic problem with how we raise white boys. How we should help white boys get into college with their still shitty white boy bringing all that with
them. We can't course correct that. It's not even a matter of the mom, which again, the fact that we've only made it moms, not parents, just moms, helping their kids complete the applications. That's not the issue. Exactly. It is systemic of like, what they feel they need to do. And similarly, like, you know, when you were saying about how, you know, college is a time to like make friends and things, it's also a time to meet people with different viewpoints if you have not already done that on your own. And again, we don't encourage those boys to do that. I know that was something that was innately interesting to me as an open-minded person who was also, you know, not straight, and I was not coming from the same perspective as maybe everybody else.
Yeah.
But you need that. That's also, I think, your own responsibility as somebody who hopefully has some sort of empathy is to, and if you don't, to develop empathy and to look at other viewpoints. And then you're going to want to go to college, and it's not going to matter to you if it's top heavy with women. You're going to be like, women are great. Women are people. Let's just go. Who cares? That's a school, you know?
I agree. And I think that's the biggest point. The coddling of your fear and lack of curiosity is, I believe, what creates so much of this horrible tension, right? Not understanding, not learning, not appreciating. So to create coddled spaces where you get to still be your same shitty self. Yeah.
Now here's, okay, no here, I will,
we
I'm
gonna
sure say
no one
thing.
Because they need to stay their same, like it's.
Right, no, I, okay. I totally see everything you guys are saying. And obviously more in that realm, but I want one more thing that people are saying when looking at this data is that part of the thing that men are seeing is that college degrees are not worth it. I am someone who think college degrees are really important. They're great. And in most cases, they're too expensive. So we need to actually work on how expensive it is to get a college degree. And why is that? And why don't we do more? And in some states, they are doing more. And maybe we will be able to do more on a national level. But that's also something that people talk about. Just in closing, do either of you have thoughts on people who say, well, this trend speaks to the fact that men are realizing that college degrees are not as useful as they once
were.
Well,
that literally speaks to the first point that I had posited, which is the idea that men are like, oh, I'm not going to need this anyway because the world is still going to fall below, like, beneath my feet. It still speaks to that. Like, this is not that useful to me. This is too expensive and I'm going to be fine either way.
Right. Whereas there's ways women, I can circumvent this thing. Yeah.
Yes. And that's absolutely what I was trying to say, where it's like men know, like, oh, you know what? I don't even think I have to do that anymore because I'm going to be fine either way. Whereas women, people of color, queer people, people who are disadvantaged, you know, in whatever, economically, no, I have to really bank on that. That's my best bet. So again, it's like, it speaks to a systemic problem.
Okay, folks, let me know what you think of this gender gap. Does it concern you, or are you like, it's fine? And do you think we need to help these dudes, like, get over this whatever hurdle that is happening? Or do you think that we should absolutely not coddle them any further? I don't know. I'm so curious to hear your thoughts. This is a really, this was a really interesting finding. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break and learn about our sponsors. And when we come back, we'll get into it with another topic. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we are back, and we're ready for topic number two. So there's this really shitty new abortion law in Texas. And like I said, Liz Winstead is known as a decorated comedian. In fact, I've seen her kill in multiple states of this grand union. She's just an incredible comedian you have to see live. But what you may not totally realize about her is she is an equally decorated abortion rights advocate. And so, Liz, can you tell us what is happening in Texas right now?
Well, currently, the thing that people have heard is all true, and that is the fact that Texas has shot its disgusting wad all over, making it impossible to access abortion care before 6 weeks, which most people don't know they're pregnant at 6 weeks. And so to make matters worse, they have deputized America to hunt down Texans who are seeking abortion and to bring about lawsuits if you have tried to seek abortion after 6 weeks. There's a $10,000 bounty that the person, real or imagined, accessing helping someone access any way they can help, whether that is you've heard the Uber driver, a hotel that might put someone up for the night, your friend who lent you money, anybody can get sued. And what I think a lot of people miss on this is $10,000 is the minimum. You can sue for as much as you want. So providers are terrified. People don't want to do provide abortions. And then snuck into a couple of days after that, which people didn't even realize, is that the governor signed into law banning medication abortion after 7 weeks. So medication abortion is the only real way that most people have early abortions. And now you can't have an early abortion to terminate your early pregnancy that you probably didn't even know you were pregnant. So you're just taking a guess and maybe am I pregnant? Maybe I should have an abortion. I don't know. It's awful. So there have been the clinic suing. In full disclosure, I am on the board of that clinic, so I'm immersed. They went to the Supreme Court to say, hey, it seems dubious at best and unconstitutional at worst that you would allow a ban on abortion after 6 weeks, because Roe v. Wade gives the constitutional right to 24 weeks of abortion. And B, it seems double creepy that you would allow citizens to intervene in somebody's constitutional right to access care and somebody's constitutional right to provide care, because you start messing with people's livelihoods on yeah. top of it, right? And the Supreme Court said, oh, it's too confusing. I don't know. It's like too much.
So we're just let them sue them. Let them sue each other. We don't want to deal with it.
Yeah, we're just gonna let that stay. And
Who are we to get involved?
We're only the people that you come to when things are hard, but it's even too hard for us. So I don't know what to tell you. So the clinics were like, what? So the Department of Justice is suing under the grounds that it is violating all kinds of laws. And just before I popped on today, the state of Texas, okay, are you guys ready? The state of Texas is suing the Department of Justice, saying that they're not in violation, because what Texas is actually doing is creating commerce outside of the state when Texans leave the state to have abortions. So by the DOJ intervening, they're intervening in interstate commerce.
What twisted tourism is that?
I don't...
Like, who's doing that? Like, you know what would be fun? Let's go get an abortion out of state. It'll be great. We'll generate income in another state. Like, no one's thinking that way.
Yeah, it's like a spa weekend.
Yeah, let's go. Like, they need it. And the economy is really struggling. Let's go get an abortion. Like,
well, so one doctor has fallen on the sword by providing an abortion. He wrote an op-ed about it. And he was immediately sued by two people who are actually... So one person is an out-of-state dude named Oscar Stilley, who is serving a prison term on house arrest in Arkansas. And he actually said he's not personally opposed to abortion, but feels strongly that, quote, if there's money to be had, it's going to go in Oscar's pocket. Well, he likes to refer to himself in the third person. So that's just a fun feature of Oscar on top of his other fun features as a person. And so that's one of the lawsuits. And then the second lawsuit is from a man named Felipe Gomez of Illinois, who's another disbarred lawyer who labels himself actually a pro-choice plaintiff, whose complaint asked that SB 8 be overturned. So these are now the weird cases that are maybe the best chance for SB 8 to be vacated. But who knows? So Liz, like, what's going to happen now?
Well, you know, as we talk about Texas, we also have to realize that going before the Supreme Court on December 1st is the Mississippi case, which is Mississippi is going to Mississippi. Just that's what's going to happen. So Mississippi brought a 15-week ban, and not once, but twice, the most conservative court in the land, who hates abortion more than all the other abortion haters, said, you know what? This is a bridge too far. It's against Roe v. Wade, so we're not going to uphold this. Not once, but twice. And the state of Mississippi was like, you know what? We don't care. We're going to actually just go to the Supreme Court ourselves and ignore two lower court rulings. And this is unheard of. And the Supreme Court takes cases where precedent is questioned, right? Where there's a disagreement on the lower courts with what's happening in precedent that the Supreme Court has set. But that's not the case here. The lower court ruled with precedent, all should be good. And the Supreme Court said, we don't care about that. We're going to take the case anyway. It's like wild. So on October 2nd, the Supreme Court will hear oral arguments in this 15-week case. And if the Supreme Court agrees with Mississippi and says, we don't think there's a constitutional right to have an abortion at 15 weeks, then Roe v. Wade is overturned. And as we speak, the state of Ohio is trying to join 11 other states in creating a trigger ban. And what that means is, if the Supreme Court does indeed uphold this Mississippi law and Roe v. Wade is overturned, it means that 25% of the states in America will automatically make abortion illegal in all cases. So, and if that happens, that will happen as soon as spring of 2022. So we are in a crisis. We're in this crisis for many reasons. One, because of assholes who are like, elections don't matter, everybody's the same. Two, because people don't look at abortion as a human rights issue that they want to defend and hold politicians accountable for. And three, the media never, ever covers these things unless they're sensational. And so when stuff happens, we don't know about it. So I'm actually, Abortion Access Front, we're actually on December 2nd, we're launching a weekly YouTube talk show called Feminist Buzzkills Live that's going to cover a weekly all the laws that are coming down the pike, actually interview the activists and the providers and the clinic escorts and the politicians who are working on these laws on states, so that, and giving calls to action, so we can actually keep people involved and informed. Because I know people care, but if you don't know about it, you start caring too late. I mean, we're marching on Saturday for what? What's the call to action? What are we doing?
Right. I mean, Lane, do you, is it, what, like, on that issue of whether or not people care, when you heard about this news out of Texas, were you like, oh, this is just another bump? Or did you feel the full thrust of, like, what Liz has been describing to us? Like, this is not, you know, this is an issue that I follow, but it's not an issue that that's central to, like, whatever. I mean, it's central to me as a woman. But it's, you know, so I wonder, just like from a civilian standpoint, where did this news land for you?
I would say that's fairly accurate, because of the reasons that Liz stated, where, you know, what I had heard, and interestingly enough, I heard it, I think, in passing, like the way we, most of us do, which is like on Twitter, which is just like, oh no, they've banned abortion.
Yeah.
And because it has been, you know, particularly in so many of our lifetimes, this like ongoing push and pull of like, oh, it's getting banned. Oh, it's repealed. Oh, it's getting banned. It's repealed. It's this thing that it wears you down, probably on purpose, to make you think that like, oh, it'll get repealed. Yeah. It'll get repealed. We don't have to worry about it. We don't have to worry about it. Because thank God there are people who are able to do this, who are able to do this work and able to provide these calls to actions and you know, be able to explain what the hell we do to combat this. And so fortunately, we're usually able to do that, even though it seems insane that we're constantly asked to do that. But yeah, I absolutely, until Liz said that, had no idea that this was that dire. And that's terrifying that these things continuously, it seems, just go under the radar until it's almost too late or is just effectively too late. That's disgusting.
And they're looking at laws similar to this, because, you know, in, I think, Florida and a couple of other states. And I think that is one thing I really want to, like, just reveal in myself, which is that I didn't realize the extent until, you know, we were reading about it and talking about it today. And I think you're right that the way that this whole battle has been waged has been designed to lull us into a state of boredom. Because if you believe that women should have these rights, as I do, you're just like, I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Yeah, because it seems insane to constantly
it's just like,
be asking.
God, I know, exactly. And so it's hard to, I think, maintain the verve that Liz has, you know, has done for so many years in this fight, which we obviously thank God, because if we didn't have people like Liz doing it, then what the fuck, right? So I don't know. It's really I guess, Liz, what can people do?
Well, I think what people can do is, I would just say, go to aafront.org. That's my thing. Like, the first thing that we're doing is, one of the cool things that we do is that we make sure that we redirect when big state things happen to the organizations on the ground where you can be helpful. And we help do resets on conversations. We introduce people to the organizations that need to be helped. And then we also are a hub for learning this information and getting calls to action. You know, it's not helpful to just be Islamophobic and say the Texas Taliban and all this other stuff. Like, we really discourage that kind of language. This is Christian extremism at its finest, and we need to lay it at the feet of where it's coming from, because that is where it's coming from. And so I really kind of feel like there's just a lot of language that we can do. And, you know, honestly, if you don't do anything else, say the word abortion. If you've had an abortion and you feel comfortable talking about it, talk about it, because we're never going to win this fight unless we all have conversations that keep abortion and put abortion in its proper place, an option that somebody might need in their reproductive lifetime. And it's a moral choice, and it's a choice that helps people get back on a path of their own self-determination. And we need to, that needs to be where we start, because if not, we are stripping humanity away from women and people with uteruses. And I just can't live on that planet. I just can't.
And I also want to point out that the doctor, Dr. Braid, who performed the abortion in Texas and wrote an op-ed about it, who is now being sued, he wrote that, you know, when he started working at a hospital in 1972, it was the year before Roe v. Wade. And that year he saw three teenagers die from illegal abortions. Because the other thing to think about is whether or not you like the idea of an abortion, it will happen whether it's legal or not. But if it's legal, it can be safe and save lives. And so one thing that he saw that year was three teenagers died, and he talked about some of them in some detail that was just really shocking and horrifying. And it, you know, and he was like, oh, well, I don't want to ever see that happen. It's my duty of care for these women to have safe abortions. And so I think check that piece out, too, because it was a really, I think, compelling piece about, you know, you can be against abortion, but it doesn't matter, because when women are desperate, they're going to pursue it. But, you know, let's make it safe. That's another side of the argument. If you don't believe in women's rights or whatever, like, that's maybe you just don't want them to die unnecessarily.
But that's like, that's also so insane, because the first thing I think of when I hear that is I think of, and how were those men's lives affected? How were those men's lives impacted in any way? These women literally died. And we act like this is some women's thing. Like, oh, if I come in you, it's up to your body what it does with it. Like, nope. Actually, this is extremely a men's issue. And not that, you know, and I resent having to recenter men in something like this. It's ridiculous to have to do that to get certain people to care. But it's like, no, this is everybody. If we're doing this, it's like sex education. It's like, we know people are having sex. Liz, what are we doing?
Do you know in Texas, can they sue the guy? Can they sue the guy?
Of course not.
No, they can't.
Nagin, let's say you brought someone to their abortion and you got sued. Or let's say you brought someone to get birth control. They weren't even having an abortion. They decided to sue you. And you had to spend a bunch of money to get that legal to clear your name. You don't get compensated for your legal costs. You're on the hook for the legal costs. And so that is part of it, that why physicians, and like, if you just work at the front desk at a clinic and you're making, you know, $15 an hour,
you could get sued. You could get sued.
That's exactly right. And so there is no...
This is an evil...
Well,
oh,
and
my,
the fact that it is happening at a gross economic crisis, like during a gross economic crisis, is really disgusting on so many levels.
And then we just... And because anyone is empowered to sue, we're just hoping that Oscar Stilley from Arkansas isn't going to sue the person who's working at the front desk making minimum wage, right?
Right. Like, what, that's, at a time with hoping, like, record unemployment and like everybody needs money. And like, it's just it's too many things.
It's crazy. It's crazy, folks. I don't know. Hit me up. How crazy do you feel? Did you know that it was this crazy? Do you feel like this was underreported, or maybe like there was a dose of sugar with the reporting? Let me know. Again, Liz, what's the website?
AAfront.org. And, you know, if you're feeling like, oh my God, this is so much information, what am I doing? Like, it's, we're doing, as everyone is marching on the October 2nd, Abortion Access Front has decided, instead of going to a rally and hearing fancy people speak, we are spending all day going from clinic to clinic, because the clinic, the people who work at the clinics can't be at the rallies because nobody thought to plan for them to attend, because they're escorting patients and they're providing care. So we're going to be going to some of the rallies and broadcasting all over the country, talking to the abortion funds, the providers, patients, and everybody, and getting what they do and how you can help. And then we're compiling this massive data base where you can rewatch the live stream if you want, or just look to see state by state where you can be helpful. So you'll know where to go and where to donate. And that'll be up on our website, aafront.org. But watch the live stream. You're going to learn a lot of stuff.
All right, let us move on to topic number three. Okay, so we're going to reach into the grab bag of stuff that's happening in the world this week to pull out the fact that we are doing another one of these fucking debt ceiling things. Now, we record this on a Wednesday. There might be a vote apparently tomorrow about this debt ceiling. We may avoid a government shutdown. We've talked about government shutdowns like a ton. We've talked about them on this show a bunch, and we've been around for 5 years, but they've been used as a weapon a lot, I guess. I don't know for how long it's been, 10, 15 years. Liz, what do you think about this fucking debt ceiling garbage?
I mean, we've shut down our borders. We've shut down access to abortion. We're shutting down the government. I'm not sure what's open anymore. I feel like nothing's open. Is anything open? I feel a little bit like confused about what exactly is open. I mean, I feel like it takes some, like, I just feel, I'm always feeling gaslit. We all are, right? But to go ahead and vote for things and then spend the money, and then when it comes time to pay the bills, to say, yeah, we're not gonna. And it just seems so wrong, especially as we all know, like every single time Trump wanted to raise the debt ceiling, Republicans were climbing over themselves to literally put Gold Bond on his balls before they did it. And so it's like, here we sit with them, this isn't about, we already spent this. Like we already put it on the credit card. You agreed to put it on the credit card. You were there. You voted for it. Yes. And now you don't want to pay for it. It's just disgusting. And I really feel like it just feels like more gaslighting and more obstruction. And it just shows that, like, I'm very tired of people saying the Democrats are infighting within their own party. It's like, I think we need to do a reset. There's no Republican Party anymore. They're just orcs and White Walkers. And then the Democratic Party is fighting within themselves because part of the Democratic Party is exactly living to the tenets of the Republican Party of 1984. So that is what we're having. We're having a crappy discussion between Republicans that call themselves Democrats and actual Democrats. And so the orcs are literally fire-breathing their way through the government, and it's a shit show.
I think that's accurate. I also should point out the fact that we even have a debt ceiling is the stupidest. I said this like in the last debt ceiling debate. It is the stupidest feature. Like, we don't need it. Like, just write a bill, get rid of the debt ceiling. It's dumb. It's totally a formality. Like, this vote used to be just a total formality. Everyone did it. Like, we're raising the debt ceiling. Yay. Okay, great. We're done. It was so nothing. We've turned it into this political battle. It's really toxic. And the debt ceiling is not, it's silly. We don't need it. Someone write a bill removing it or making it infinite or whatever you need to do. This is dumb. I don't want to live through another one of these conversations. Can we use the branches that we sort of control? Is Kyrsten Sinema gonna let us or whatever? They could remove this thing. Like, let us remove it for both parties, both Republicans and Democrats. Please stop. It's dumb. Okay. That's the debt ceiling. Let's move on quickly to R. Kelly. Lane, R. Kelly was found guilty on all 9 charges against him. One of the questions that just sort of popped up is, why did this take so long?
How is that even a question? Because people don't care about black women and women of color. Like, it's just, and women in general. Like, that's literally it. That's literally the entire answer. Right, I don't feel that there's another answer. I think you nailed it.
I also think, too, like, it just shows you that, like, how disgusting it, and to the great lengths that people who profit off of garbage humans who are popular will protect their brand at all costs. You know, Cosby didn't take 5 minutes either, right? Mm-hmm. So when it comes to people literally saying, well, how many people are going to like lose their jobs and their payroll and their and all this other shit on top of like also people don't care about black girls and black women, you know, young black underage girls. I have seen some hot takes on Twitter that have made me so angry this week that I can't even like, you know, Rick James got 18 months. That should be enough. It's like everybody can just shut up.
And also I you know, the one thing that I thought was fascinating, I just like, you know, put together a list of what, you know, what some of these articles were talking about and how this all, you know, how he managed to orchestrate for decades not getting in trouble over this. He had, like you mentioned, he had a lot of enablers who had, you know, a vested interest in him making money. He also managed a lot of settlements. So he would, there would be something would come up, there would be a settlement, it would quiet them down, there'd be all these, right, NDAs they couldn't talk about it, blah, blah, blah. Then he also managed paying a lot of women to keep them quiet from cooperating with the authorities. So there's that layer. Then there was another layer of threatening women by posting, saying that he would post nude photos or other embarrassing information about them if they went public. So on top of people don't care about, you know, black women and girls, and don't care about women in general, they're also, he managed these, what seems like a full-time job of just trying, of using all of these different layers of you know, institutional frameworks to try and like tamp down this thing, as opposed to just fucking don't do it. Like, he could have had so much more free time if he wasn't a disgusting criminal. You know what I mean?
He really should have wrote a song called "I Believe I Can Fly Under the Radar."
And he could.
There it is. Okay, our last piece in the grab bag is that the Tonys are back. Did you feel a little jazz hand in the air as the Tonys were up on Sunday? And what is it? What did it mean for you?
I was sad I didn't watch it just because I was busy, but I'm really excited about like just theater and things. And I'm hoping it's safe, and I'm hoping people are good. And I just think that like the American theater, but it is so incredibly important to this live performance is chicken soup for the soul. And it really just is. And so to see these things happening, it makes me feel happy. And I feel happy that they were honoring the people who were forgotten for their great work, you know, when the pandemic closed down. You know, they got to have their Tonys.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I saw the performance that Mary Louise Parker won. Mary Louise Parker won for Best Actress, and I happened to have seen that show, and I just had this feeling of, oh my gosh, like how special that I saw that in 2019, and then she won, and so deserving. Like, that was a really terrific, just amazing, amazing performance. And I just got this, like, these chills of the experience and going with my friend. It was so nice to invite me, and like just the feeling we had, like sitting there together, just like, oh my god, engrossed in this wonderful show, and then to see the show win, and like just was so, I just had all of those feelings, and feeling like that was one of the most powerful nights of entertainment that I've had in years, was that one experience. And I really wish for that experience for everybody who can access it, you know. So I don't know, I was really excited. Lane, how'd you feel?
Yeah, so similarly, I didn't get to watch it because I had just come back from touring during a pandemic still. Where like I booked the tour being like, we're going to be fine by fall. I'm going to do it. Yay, 40 cities. And then it was like, oh no, like as soon as it happened. So I was very much sleeping. But on that same note, I was like, I think so many of us, like, we want to perform again. We want to perform again the right way. We want to perform again safely. We want everybody to be safe and healthy, and for things to be normal, and for everyone not to be terrified, and for artists to be able to work again and convene with an audience, because that's it's the most powerful exchange. Like, where I think it's so important to remember how important it is on both sides. Like, it's so important for performers to be able to perform for people and have that sense of community. But it's so important for the audience to have that sense. It's just this wonderful exchange that happens that's really like nothing else. And the arts is just suffering so much. Like, I know very firsthand in this country, we need it back. Everybody needs it back.
And like, I, you know, I've been in a million comedy clubs and since we've sort of reopened. And I have to say, in New York City, I feel safe at them. I imagine I would also feel safe on Broadway. How do you guys feel? I mean, Lane, you've been performing everywhere. How does it feel?
I think that was one of the hardest things is when you're going across the country, every city is different and you don't entirely know what their city is like. So there were some cities where I would get there and I'd be like, wait, everyone here is dying? Literally no one mentioned that to me like before. And it's just like, it's just so truly insane. And largely, and then you find out like, oh, that's because nobody here believes this is real. And you're like, oh, Jesus Christ. Like, it's just... it's one of those things where we realize for the millionth time, we are not a United States. We are, everybody's very individualized. Everybody views things very differently. And that's one of the things that's been frustrating. So, you know, there were some cities where I really realized it was very heartening to hear from people who were like, you're my first comedy show in 2 years. I haven't been outside to any show in 2 years. And I was like, I felt very honored for that. And, you know, made it as safe as I possibly could for those people who felt that way. And it just... what it meant to them, what it meant to me was almost heightened because it's not something you can really do anymore. And we've been so lonely. And for me, comedy has always been my primary source of connection. I've always been felt that kind of challenging in my life. So that's been my form of connection. And I think that's true for so many people. Yeah.
Liz, you're a fucking legend. How do you feel about shows reopening?
Well, I have dates booked in San Francisco and Portland and Seattle. And, you know, my audience is people who are going to be vaccinated, people who aren't going to come if there's no vaccination and masks. But so I'm working at venues and I canceled a show that the club wouldn't, you know, implement standards that I want.
Yeah.
But it goes to, even though those implementations are in place, is my audience feeling comfortable coming to a venue and being inside, right? So, you know, if I had Jim Brewer's audience, I'd be nailing it because they don't give a shit about anything, right? It's like, I'm just going to come and breathe anywhere. I'm just going to literally... climb into a COVID K-hole and come coated in COVID and just be at the show and not give a fuck, you know? So I'm excited to go back on stage. I've done a bunch of outdoor shows. I haven't done any shows inside. And so I've had people say, yeah, maybe I'm coming, maybe I'm not coming. You know, I mean, I had my 60th birthday this year and I had people who were going to come and then like, say like, I just don't feel comfortable. And that's literally like 40 of my closest friends who know that every single person there is like walks around self-testing constantly for COVID. Right. So you know, people, I just worry about people's safety because I don't want people to stay in a space where they don't know how to find peace and comfort to go experience the joy they need. And I worry about that for people who are really concerned, as well as, you know, the crackpots who don't care at all. I think that, like, I want people
to... That was something I heard a lot. And it was like, and I can't... I'm not going to argue with anybody because you want everyone to feel safe. Like, absolutely. So that was the weirdest thing, yeah.
Well, for what it's worth, folks, if you are coming to New York City, I have been to multiple shows, and they... feel safe. I haven't heard of them being the center of any kind of outbreak, or nothing has been traced back to them. Anecdotally and with no scientific backing, I will say it's totally cool. So come support the arts. All right, folks, that is the end of the show. I would love for the people of Fake the Nation to be able to follow you and all the stuff that you do. You're both so incredible. Lane, where do they do that?
You can follow me on @HelloLaneMoore on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok and all of the things. And then you can find all of my tour dates there or at lanemoore.org.
And I'm going to be joining Lane on Friday in New York City. So if you, this show drops on Thursday, if you get this in time, please come to the show on Friday. It'll be a fun time. We're going to be doing Tinder Live with David Cross, who's also a Fake the Nation alum. So it'll be a really fun time.
And Liz is on the show too, and it's great. It's so good.
It is one of the funnest shows to be on, to attend. I cannot stress enough, if Tinder Live is in your life, please go to it. It is, I'm just plugging that because it's so much fun and I love it so much. And I love you so much, Lane and Unagin too. I am hitting the road in early November. So that's fun. And also look for Feminist Buzzkills Live premiering December 2nd, streaming on the Abortion Access Front YouTube every Thursday, which is going to be amazing. And we're live streaming the marches and we're going coast to coast. So look for that too. Learn more about how you can participate and help. Nagin, you have Lane. We're going to pull you out with us on the road when we start going back out again.
I want to. Let's do it.
We'll put your skills to work too. Before you know it, you're gardening. You're painting a clinic. You're like, what is happening?
Oh my God! I was out with Liz and her team in West Virginia. It was like so wonderful. It was so delightful to meet those people. We did a show. We helped out at this clinic. I mean, I felt like really my well was filled. Is that an expression? My well was filled. Just like my soul well or whatever. Thank you, Liz. And please go to abortionaccess.org. Is that right?
AAfront.org is the website. And we're Abortion Front on all socials. And I'm Liz Winstead on all socials.
So absolutely follow these extraordinary women. You know where to find me and all of the things. And again, I'm going to be on Wait, Don't Tell Me this week. So check that out. And I'm on an upcoming episode of Star Talk with Neil deGrasse Tyson, a Faith the Nation alum. So check that out. I would love for you to join us at patreon.com/Nagin Farsad, where you can find ways to support the show at every level. It is not an alienating experience to go. But what I would really love to do is thank all of the people that make this show happen. That's first of all, our new producer, Danielle Jones Wesley. So hello, Danielle. Danielle is new to Fake the Nation. I've met her. She's so delightful. You're gonna love her work. You've already experienced some of her ideas for the show today. So Danielle, just starting the show off hot. Thank you so much to our sound engineer, Stephanie Aguilar, and all the wonderful people at HeadGum. And Mike Comte, who's here recording with us in the HeadGum studios. I'm in studio, folks. And the theme music is written by Gabi Alter. Please don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Email us at fakethenation@headgum.com. And we'll be back in your earballs next week. That was a HeadGum podcast.